Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out. So you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics. They're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Nobel Prize for Economics awarded to three men of distinguished careers. There is Darren Acemoglu, Simon Johnson, and James Robinson. The first two are at MIT, the third at the University of Chicago. The reason for the attention of the Nobel Committee is they're thinking about how nations succeed and fail in history. This is the nations of the last 500 years. The colonizers, the imperial colonizers, the empires, and those who are not. I welcome David Henderson of the Hoover Institution. He is editor of the Concise Encyclopedia of Economics. His earlier review of a book written by two of these Nobelists, Acemoglu and Robinson, the book Why Nations Fail. It has a compelling thesis. David, a very good evening to you. Extractive and inclusive.
Right.
What is the difference and how did these gentlemen understand our 500-year history of the New World?
I want to do it in two steps. First of all, the extractive and inclusive, what those mean and how those explain things, and then how that came about. So extractive means a government just basically robs the people. They extract resources from them. And they point out, and Adam Smith pointed out, as I said in my Wall Street Journal review, that if you have governments extracting, you don't have much incentive for normal people to produce wealth, and so you don't get much economic growth. Inclusive means that they allow people to have their own resources, and then, of course, people have an incentive to produce. So that's a huge part of what's in Why Nations Fail, which I reviewed some years ago. The next step, and this was emphasized by the Nobel Committee, is asking the question, okay, why are some governments extractive and some inclusive? Now, here's what I'm going to tell you what these three said. I'm not saying I totally believe it. It's plausible, which is that the colonizers, when they came to a country, if there was a lot of disease and it was just very hard to survive, not many colonizers came, and even some of the ones who did died. And so with very few of them, they say, well, we don't want to bother setting up institutions to help our people because there aren't many of our people. So they became extractive. They just took people's wealth. On the other hand, the colonizers who came to countries where there was less disease, like malaria and so on, and in those countries, lots of other colonizers came because it was more attractive to them. So they set up the institutions for wealth to grow more generally. And of course, two great examples of that are United States and Canada, where I came from originally, because there wasn't a lot of disease. And so that was a good place to have for the colonizers to have institutions that allowed pretty much everyone to grow wealth.
Meaning that the United States is the inheritor of location, location, location. Is that it, David?
I hadn't thought of putting it that way, but that's a great way of putting it.
Well, good for us. Now, we did depend upon some institutions that we inherited from the old world rejected. One would be the rule of law. Is that important to these Nobelists?
That's very important. You have to, because you have to have people being able to trust that if they play by the rules, if they play within the current law, they will be fine. And so they won't get expropriated if there are no rules to expropriate them. They won't get suddenly taxed more heavily if the tax rates are low and they know those tax rates will remain for some long time, and so on.
You tell me, David, quite in addition to the column you've posted at the Wall Street Journal, that it's important to pay attention to the predecessor of all these insightful arguments, Adam Smith. What did he say in the 18th century, published 1776?
Yes. So everyone refers to Adam Smith's book as The Wealth of Nations. What I like to remind people and what I used to remind my students is that the whole title of the book is an inquiry into the nature and causes of the wealth of nations. So Adam Smith did look at this, and I had a stronger paragraph in my Wall Street Journal piece, but for space reasons, it was edited down. But I pointed out, you know, they should have given a little more credit to Adam Smith than they did. And so Adam Smith pointed out that here you have what became United States and Canada. They weren't those when he wrote in 1776, but those places where you had not that many natural resources, whereas in Latin America, you had more natural resources. But the difference is it was the British with their institutions coming to this area and the rule of law and so on. And Acemoglu and Johnson and Robinson would say, and also there wasn't much disease for them to, and so there were more colonizers. They came here and people thrived. Whereas Mexico, for example, which had, and much of Latin America, which had more resources, people didn't thrive. Well, you had the Spanish introduce their institutions, and their institutions were much less pro-economic freedom.
And in reading your column, David, I confess I immediately drew upon the example of the Roman Empire. I've been reading a great deal about Rome, Suetonius about the Vespasian and his sons, and then the mistakes made in Roman Britain. And I got to thinking that Rome was an extractive empire, and perhaps that contributes to why once the military was off the reservation, it fell apart. There was no collective interest in maintaining property rights or of working together. Once the power of the Senate was gone, so was the whole idea of the colony.
Interesting. I must say I'm pretty much ignorant of the Roman Empire, but that sounds quite plausible to me. Now, that's one thing, by the way, that the three Nobelists wouldn't have picked up. Because when I read their work, I realized they were talking from basically the modern age of colonization, namely 1500 and later.
Right.
So they would have caught that.
Well, that's an excellent example that I'm projecting because when I read the Wall Street Journal, I often project. Don't you, David? I mean, there are a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
Now, back to their work right now. How does it help us today to understand the contests in the world?
I think their work helps us more than it helps them. And let me explain that. That, in other words, if we take seriously the rule of law, private property, the things they think about, we will think one way about various economic policies. But in other words, what we'll try to do is have the rule of law, have private property, and I would add have relatively little regulation and relatively low taxes. They wouldn't have said that, but I would add that. But if you look at the way Acemoglu, he's the one who's most outspoken about government policy. If you look at the way he's gone in the last few years, he's advocating industrial policy. And he has tremendous faith in the government having two characteristics that it doesn't have. One is knowledge, so they can figure out which industries to invest in. And the other is good incentives and good faith. And they don't have either of those.
It would appear from the examples of these last years that our government, as informed as it is, has a very difficult time picking winners. Is that indicative of anything about the wealth of nations? For example, in Germany, let's get away from America. Germany right now, Olaf Scholz is talking about more and more subsidies in order to prop up Volkswagen. Is that a way of talking about the wealth of nations that these gentlemen address, is subsidizing?
They might actually, especially Acemoglu, the one I've read more, might actually favor that. Of course, Adam Smith would have opposed that. And not in The Wealth of Nations, but in his other great book, Theory of Moral Sentiments, he has a great passage about the man of system. And the man of system, that is not a compliment. The man of system wants to move people around like pieces on a chessboard. But what he doesn't recognize is that every piece is a human who has his own motives, his own way of moving, and it's not going to work. And I didn't do as good a job of quoting Adam Smith as Smith said, but anyway, that was the gist of what Adam Smith said. And I think that Acemoglu has become a man of system.
And about the system that we inherited, the rule of law from the English common law, from the Roman law, and not every state inherited it in a similar fashion. Our property, our sense of property is it too much to say it's semi-religious?
I would say it used to be semi-religious, and I think, unfortunately, it's not now. In other words, the famous Supreme Court decision, whose name is escaping me, where they took that woman's pink house, they went against private property, and that was a really bad private property for public use, meaning government use, which I think was bad enough, but they turned public use into private use, and so that was a bad step. On the other hand, over 40 states responded to that decision, the Kelo decision,
right,
responded to that decision by introducing further restraints on state governments taking private property.
David Henderson at the Hoover Institution. He's editor of the Concise Encyclopedia Economics, writing in the Wall Street Journal about the Nobel Prize for Economics.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anababe, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anababe sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly, perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.